Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette. Today, Wednesday, April 16th, 2025. Today on the front page, there's a feature picture in the middle, a large picture of the Garden Hills Drainage Project with the heading, A Wall of Concrete Takes Shape at the East End of the Garden Hills Infrastructure Project along Hedge Road in Champaign. Phase 2 of the project began in November of 2023 and is about halfway done, according to Assistant City Engineer Alex Nagy. The City Council on Tuesday night signed off on a $16 million construction contract for Phase 3 of the project, and that is covered in Section A4, which we'll get to. Also on the front page, an article about a restaurant, the Suey Brothers Barbecue Joint by Jana Wersema from Champaign. Restaurateur seeks order of protection versus CUPHD. He claims they've been stalking him and his family. The co-owner of a local restaurant that remains closed amid a legal battle with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District claims that the district has been stalking him and his family. Alvin Allison filed a petition for a no-contact order against CUPHD on Monday. He's seeking protection not just for himself, but also for his family and business associates. This attack is on me, my family, business partners, and personal business relationships. It must be stopped immediately, he said. I cannot continue to be relentlessly attacked by this government agency because I chose to stand up to them, and I'm begging that they no longer be allowed to keep going after everything I'm attached to. I'm asking that I get a full order of protection until this lawsuit is fully settled. Due to the ongoing nature of this legal matter, we are unable to provide any comments at this time, CUPHD officials said. Allison is requesting that the health district and its representatives be prohibited from stalking, contacting himself, his business associates, and his family, coming within 100 feet of protected parties, entering his businesses, including Suey Brothers and CBPB Popcorn Shop, speaking publicly or on social media about Suey Brothers and CBPB Popcorn Shop. Allison alleged that after ordering Suey Brothers to close in late February, Champaign UPHD refused to test his equipment but later returned to his restaurant and took pictures of a family member's car, his truck, and his business partner's car. Health district representatives came back the next day, took more pictures from a nearby business parking lot, and then sent the pictures to Allison's house, he claims. He continued that since he was out of town working on another restaurant, a family member opened the package at his request and was distressed to see pictures of her car along with written timestamps that were either right after she arrived or soon before she left, leading her to fear that she might be hurt by the senders. As a father who tries to do the very best he can for his family, the Champaign PhD has broken every rule in business and violated most of its guidelines and procedures to destroy my family and business, Allison said. Allison also claims that CUPHD's package included screenshots of Facebook posts written by him and Suey Brothers, co-owner Isis Griffin, on their personal pages, as well as posts from the business page. He said that while some of the posts from his page were about the conflict with the health district, others pertained to my own personal thoughts on life and people. He added that there were also screenshots of people saying hateful things about my business on News Gazette articles and other posts, and he feels that CUPHD is trying to intimidate him into silence. Additionally, he claimed that CUPHD food program coordinator Penny Murphy has been working to further disrupt and stop me from doing business outside of Champaign County. Specifically, he wrote that Murphy contacted Macomb's public health director in an attempt to make me look like a difficult person to work with and began an attack on CBPB Popcorn Shop, which he said is legally owned by Griffin and registered to her solely in the state of Illinois. Allison's petition included screenshots of emails between Murphy and the McDonough County Health Department. In the first, dated March 18th, Murphy wrote that the situation regarding Suey Brothers before posing a query. In an administrative hearing at our office this morning, Allison submitted pictures of his facility in your jurisdiction and claimed that you wanted him to remove the walk-in cooler and use reach-in units, as there were problems with the walk-in cooler, she said. After a quick search, I found that they have a shaved ice and popcorn shop in your jurisdiction, which would not require a walk-in cooler. Can you verify this and provide any other information you think may be pertinent? MCHD Environmental Health Director Stephanie Johnson replied that her department did not indicate that Allison should remove his walk-in cooler at Dat Wing Spot. We did tell him that it needs to be secure and have a lock on it, as it is outside the restaurant and opens to the outdoors. See the attached letter, she said. In the menu review part of the plan review, they indicated that they will not be cooling and reheating and that things that will be cooked to order, so he may not need to use the WIC. She added that the new popcorn shop was still in the plan review phase. Allison also said that Murphy reached out to the University of Illinois about his vending operations at the State Farm Center and Memorial Stadium. His exhibits included a screenshot of an email Murphy sent to U of I on March 20th, stating that CU PhD had some questions as to where items are being prepared, held, etc. Because of her emails and phone calls, the Suey Brothers stand was removed from State Farm Center the following day, Allison said. Not because we did anything wrong per our contract, but because the university was not comfortable with the way Penny Murphy portrayed me personally and my business. To not be in the middle, which is where the CU PhD wanted to put the university, they chose to suspend my Suey Brothers over 8-year relationship. The Division of Intercollegiate Athletics provided the following statement to the News Gazette. Mr. Allison is a subcontractor for Oakview Group, OVG, food and beverage vendor for the Division of Intercollegiate Athletics. Suey Brothers and CBPB operated stands at football and men's basketball games during the 24-25 season. After learning of the red card, OVG operated the Suey Brothers stand with OVG food at the final men's home basketball game. There is no status update to provide as the season has concluded. Allison's petition included U of I and Macomb, Illinois, as places of employment that the health district and its representatives should be prohibited from entering. His request for a no-contact order was filed just days before the hearing with the CU PhD Board of Health to appeal Suey Brothers' red placard, which is set for Wednesday night. He and the health district are also set to appear in court Thursday for a hearing. The health district ordered Suey Brothers to close in late February, citing a lack of refrigeration due to the walk-in cooler not being in operation. However, Allison and Griffin have argued that the order is unfair and that their commercial refrigerator exceeds the necessary requirements for reducing temperatures. Suey Brothers initially refused to close, but eventually shut its doors on March 12th after Champaign County Judge Jason Baum approved the health district's request for a temporary restraining order. In addition to the matter above, Allison filed a separate lawsuit against CU PhD and Director of Environmental Health Sarah Michaels for $40,000 the day after he received the red placard. He recently updated the complaint to include additional health district employees as defendants and is now claiming a $3.5 million in damages, stating the department and its employees have caused irreparable harm, mental anguish, and devastating financial damage to me personally and my business. Other defendants in that case include Environmental Health Specialist Rami Wilson, Food Program Coordinator Penny Murphy, and Health District Administrator Julie Pride. Also on the front page, an article by Luke Taylor from Urbana regarding research grants with the title, U of I Joins Lawsuit Over Cuts by DOE. The University of Illinois is suing the U.S. Department of Energy over a policy change cutting funding for facilities and administrative costs in research. The U of I joined the lawsuit alongside the Association of American Universities, the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities, and eight other universities, calling the DOE change a flagrantly unlawful action. The DOE announced Friday it was saving $4.405 million annually for American taxpayers by cutting reimbursement rates for facilities and administrative costs in energy research at universities from an average of over 30% to a standard maximum of 15%. These facilities and administrative costs are referred to as indirect costs. In announcing the change, the DOE said that while the department is cognizant that many grant recipients use indirect cost payments to effectuate research funded by the department's grant awards, these payments are not for the department's direct research funding. But the organizations and universities filing suit say standardizing numbers that have been negotiated by individual universities to suit their research needs is not the way to go. The cut is also being applied to universities, not to any other recipients of DOE grants. Only applied to universities, according to the lawsuit. If DOE's policy is allowed to stand, it will devastate scientific research at America's universities and badly undermine our nation's enviable status as a global leader in scientific research and innovation, the suit says. It cites a 2017 attempt to make a 10% cap for indirect costs for National Institute of Health grants, which was rejected by Congress. In February of this year, NIH did put in place a 15% indirect cost cap, which the lawsuit says has had dire consequences. A letter shared campus-wide and signed by U of I Chancellor Robert Jones and Provost John Coleman says these indirect costs are critical to supporting research with space, staff, electricity, and more. Research drives new ideas for a more beneficial and prosperous future. This action only slows or stops progress, harms our national security, and threatens our competitiveness with other nations, the letter read. The learning and discovery that you participate in every day is too important to risk, and we are acting to protect our momentum towards a better world. The lawsuit alleges that the DOE acted illegally by failing to follow procedures in departing from negotiated rates and terminating existing grants. It also criticizes DOE for making what the lawsuit describes as arbitrary and capricious policy. The suit says that DOE is ignoring ongoing costs for equipment, ethics review boards, and more. It says that some funding is filed as indirect costs, but actually supports multiple research projects, such as a salary for an administrative employee whose work goes beyond a single project. The organizations and universities involved in the suit are asking for relief in the form of vacating the rate cap policy, judging funding the policy illegal, and an injunction prohibiting DOE from pursuing the rate cap policy any further. An article at the top of the front page with the title Making History, Champaign County. That's a wrap. Election 25 in the books. It's official. Rantoul will have a new mayor. The Unit 4 school board will seat 5 first-time members, and there will be fewer cracks about voters not caring after 22,445 of them cast ballots in this month's election, up a full 5 percentage points from the 4 years ago. With the last vote-by-mail ballots counted and the results of April 1st going final Tuesday in Champaign County, here are a few of the notable numbers from editor Jeff D'Alessio. 34. This is the margin of victory by challenger Sam Hall with 684 votes over three-term incumbent Chuck Smith at 650 in the area's only previously too close to call mayoral race. Hall will become Rantoul's first African-American mayor, a distinction shared by Terrence Stuber in Tolono and Deshaun Williams in Urbana. Also making history is the first woman of color to represent Champaign City Council District No. 3, Shauna Claiborne, a 1,098 winner over Jamar Brown. 6,886, the number of votes for the most popular of 11 Champaign School Board candidates, Fatima Ahmed, competing against three others for a pair of two-year seats. The U of I assistant research biostatistician fell short of Amy Armstrong's Unit 4 record of 8,315 in 2015, but rolled a highly publicized race. She'll be sworn in alongside Christy Arnold at 6,249, tops among four-year seat seekers, Tony Bruno, Justin Michael Hendricks, and Grace King. 6-0, which is Democrats' record against Republican incumbents in the six contested Champaign Township races. Supervisor Leah Taylor, clerk Kevin Flynn, and all four board seats, Jessica Shorts, Sanford Hess, Rob Orr, and Alan Joyce. Meanwhile, the final margin in the City of Champaign Township's bid to fund the Strides shelter via a property tax hike was similar to the count 5 months earlier, 57.1% to 42.9% in November of 2024, 56.8% to 43.1% in April. Also on the front page, an article by Jana Wersema about the 13th District. Budget acts wax a few local projects. From Granite City, MTD's terminal upgrades, a research facility expansion at the University of Illinois, and park renovations in Urbana are among the projects impacted by approximately $67 million in cuts for Illinois' 13th Congressional District. U.S. Representative Nikki Budzinski, a Democrat from Springfield, met with local stakeholders in Granite City on Tuesday to discuss the impacts of a recent continuing resolution that excluded projects previously approved by the House Committee on Appropriations. Now these projects will face even more delays and uncertainty because my Republican colleagues refused to include this funding in the continuing resolution, she said. We will keep fighting to bring home every dollar Central and Southern Illinoisans have been promised. According to Budzinski's office, cuts to congressional community project funding awards in her district include $2 million for an expansion of U of I's Integrated Bioprocessing Research Laboratory, $500,000 for the reconstruction of Parkland Way in Champaign, $250,000 for the Illinois Terminal Expansion Project, $250,000 for Prairie and Weaver Park site rehabilitation in Urbana, $240,000 for Piatt County building improvements. Other impacted projects include efforts to provide safer drinking water, cleaner neighborhoods, and higher quality of life, Budzinski said. The House passed the continuing resolution by a vote of 217 to 213 on March 11th. The choice before us was simple. You either support keeping the government open and working for the American people, or you want a reckless government shutdown, Appropriations Committee Chair Tom Cole, a Republican of Oklahoma, said at the time. Let's cut to an opinion piece by J. Mark Powell in his Holy Cow History. With the heading, When Toxic Talk Turned into a Deadly Duel. The one and perhaps only thing Americans seem to agree on these days is political rhetoric that it's too toxic. They long for folks to cool down and behave like dignified statesmen from that long ago time before Twitter inflamed passions. Ah, the good old days. Except they weren't so good. In fact, angry words sometimes even resulted in death. This is the story of how one nasty exchange ended up badly for everyone. President Andrew Jackson despised banks, probably because he was in debt up to his eyeballs, with bankers constantly hounding him for money. He had an all-consuming hatred of the Second Bank of the United States, a forerunner of today's Federal Reserve. It was responsible for establishing sound currency and regulating credit, meaning the bank's president, Nicholas Biddle, was the Jerome Powell of his day. Jackson and his fellow Democrats thought Biddle's bank intentionally kept money in the hands of the rich and out of the hands of the working poor. They made destroying it priority number one. Henry Clay, Daniel Webster, and the National Republicans fought back equally hard, defending it. By 1830, public discourse had grown just as toxic as today. During that year's midterms elections, several blistering speeches came from Spencer Pettus, Missouri's only congressman and an ardent Jacksonian Democrat, just 28 and wildly popular. His political figure was bright. Pettus repeatedly damned the bank in general and banker Biddle in the particular. That infuriated Biddle's brother Thomas, an army major stationed in St. Louis. He wrote an angry letter to a local newspaper defending his big brother and savaging Pettus as a dish of skim milk, which apparently sounded worse in 1830 than it does today. Pettus responded with a letter questioning Biddle's manhood. It was personal now, and things only went downhill from there. The men trash-talked each other to anyone or anybody who would listen. Things reached a tipping point on July 9th of 1831 when Thomas Biddle heard that Pettus was lying sick in a St. Louis hotel room. He burst in and attacked the ailing congressman with a whip. Biddle was arrested. When he appeared in court a few days later, Pettus pulled out a pistol and tried to shoot before being restrained by friends. Pettus then challenged Biddle to a duel. The affair of honor was the talk of St. Louis. With dueling outlawed in Missouri and neighboring Illinois, they agreed to meet on the Mississippi River sandbar, a kind of no man's land between the states where the authorities wouldn't interfere. It was used so often for that purpose that the locals called it Bloody Island. Although Biddle had the choice of terms, he also had a major disadvantage. He was seriously nearsighted, so he chose pistols at 5 feet. Note, not 5 paces, 5 feet. With arms outstretched, the guns would almost touch. It would be suicide. There was no way either man could miss standing that close. Some historians believe Biddle picked the absurd distance to scare Pettus into rejecting it, thus making Biddle the winner without actually shooting. However, Pettus didn't take that bait. He accepted. A large crowd watched on the St. Louis Riverfront late on Friday afternoon of August 26th as the men and their seconds slowly rowed to Bloody Island. The two stood back to back, and then walked one step, turned, and fired directly at each other. Both fell to the ground in bleeding heaps. As they were carried away, each was heard saying he forgave the other. Pettus died the next day, and Biddle the day after that. Their funerals were among the largest and most elaborate held in St. Louis in the 19th century, as soon as they were buried. They were mostly forgotten, although a Missouri county was named in Pettus's honor 18 months later. Jackson eventually won his duel with the bank when it went out of business, but the deaths of Pettus and Biddle had nothing to do with determining that outcome. This should serve as a cautionary tale for 2025. Let's hope people of all political persuasions tone down the rhetoric before it's too late. Continuing in our community is an article from Champaign by Jana Wiersema with the heading, Road Work Ahead from the City of Champaign, Garden Hills to See Significant Street Closures This Year. Phase 3, Deals Okayed. As work continues on drainage infrastructure and other improvements for the Garden Hills neighborhood, Champaign civil engineer Tyler Suits advises that residents should expect significant road closures in 2025. These will mainly be located along Hedge Road and Paula Drive, he said. Total road closures are needed to allow for the construction of new storm sewers under the street and for construction of new sidewalks and roadway pavement, Suit says. This work will be completed in stages, and we will work with residents within each closure stage to minimize disruptions and accommodate their needs as we are able. The city will hold an open house from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday to discuss construction plans as well as a strategic neighborhood action plan with recommendations for future improvements. The event will be held at the Project Field trailer at 1723 Paula Drive, which is adjacent to Fire Station No. 5. Phase 2 of the project began in November of 2023 and is about halfway done, according to a report by Assistant City Engineer Alex Nagy. It is expected to be substantially finished by November of 2025. This phase includes stormwater, flood control, street lighting, sidewalks, and neighborhood parks and recreation amenities in the southern half of the neighborhood. When completed, the hedgerow detention basin in Phase 2 will serve as the drainage outlet for Phase 3's storm sewer system that will be constructed along the Paula Drive corridor in the northern half of the Garden Hills neighborhood, Nagy added. According to Suits, the current phase is still on track to be completed within its original budget of about $32 million. And at its Tuesday meeting, the City Council approved an approximately $16 million construction contract with Stark Excavating for Phase 3 of the project. There is also a proposed incentive of up to $404,600 if the company meets certain targets for minority and female participation in the project, Nagy said. City Council members also signed off Tuesday on a contract with Clark Dietz with a not-to-exceed amount of about $2.2 million for construction engineering services on the same phase. It is anticipated that Phase 3 construction would start in May or June 2025, with the work completed in August of 2027, Nagy wrote. Phase 3 of the project includes new storm sewers and reconstruction of the following streets: Paula Drive from Mattis Avenue to McKinley Avenue, Cynthia Drive from Paula to just north of Anita Drive, Garden Hills Drive from Paula to the Norfolk Southern Railroad tracks, Joanne Lane from Paula to the railroad tracks. Reconstruction of the streets in Phase 3 would follow a complete street concept, which includes new storm sewers, full concrete street reconstruction, sidewalks, and street lighting, Nagy wrote. Stark submitted the lowest bid for the work, which came in at about $2.7 million under the engineer's estimate. The city's 10-year capital improvement plan does not currently include any phases after Phase 3, Suit says. In other news, during a Tuesday meeting that ended with a tribute to outgoing two-term District 2 Representative Alicia Beck, council members also approved a resolution designating Walnut Street between North Street and Columbia Avenue as Honorary Patricia Avery Neal Way to honor the local community leader and trailblazer, and a $369,000 bid from Rosler Construction and Contracting to upgrade the Champaign County Police Department's 26-year-old lobby elevator, which often malfunctions, according to city staff. The agreement includes an incentive of up to $9,226 if certain targets are met for female and minority participation. An article from Rand Tool by Dave Hinton with the heading, District to Unveil New Pre-Kindergarten Center. The Rand Tool City Schools District is set to hold a grand opening for its new pre-kindergarten center. A ribbon-cutting ceremony is set for 5:30 p.m. Thursday at the center, adjacent to Pleasant Acres Elementary School. The $6 million project includes a space for pre-kindergarten students ages 3 to 5. It includes 8 classrooms with adjoining restrooms, a fully equipped multi-purpose room for gross motor activities, therapy and office spaces for service providers, a renovated and expanded playground, increased parking, and secure access for families. The new center is funded by the sale of bonds paid through Champaign County's 1% sales tax. The district has temporarily housed its pre-K program at Rantoul's United Methodist Church since the fall of 2023. Following the ribbon-cutting ceremony, community members are invited to tour the new facility. The school board is also set to hold its regularly scheduled meeting at 6 p.m. at the Pre-K Center. It will also be open to the public. The Pre-K program serves 175 students, and the new center offering capacity to expand enrollment to approximately 230 students in the coming year. And we are going to take a break now from our first half of the News Gazette. This is Lisa, and I'll return in a short while.